This is the home of Jerry's percentages.
You leave Jerry alone, he's not retiring any time soon.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app, now on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles McLennan. The O-Dog will be back momentarily. Bobby Mack will be in studio around 6:25. GM of the Grey Cup winning Argos, Jim Popp, at around 6:10.
And his mullet.
And his moulet.
Moulet.
Yeah, we're looking forward to catching up with Jim. We'll get his thoughts on the parade downtown today, down at City Hall.
And somebody has to ask him. I will. He was just stone-faced the whole time. Like, at what point did he let his guard down?
What is it about GMs? Like, why can they not ever act animated?
Well, maybe it's because you saw some animation out of Bergevin that night, and you were just loving it on Twitter.
But that was because of a meltdown, right? Like, I think I get the impression, and maybe understandably so, it's easier for GMs,
right,
to hide their emotions when they are victorious or when they're winning, when they're playing well.
Right.
As opposed to when their team is melting down.
When their team is melting down, do you want to see a GM like grab a monitor off the counter and throw it against the wall?
Yeah.
Or, like, kick a chair?
Yeah, I do want to see that. I would personally like to see it.
Do you have in recent memory anything where you've seen either a coach or a GM act like that in the...
Not really.
A coach, but I guess a GM act like that in a skybox?
Well, the camera's got to catch it.
Right.
And the TV network has to show it.
That's true.
Like, maybe it's happened before, and the network is like, you know what, we're not going to throw him out of the bus.
Right.
Even though we've got a camera on this guy at all times, we're not going to show it. I don't know why you wouldn't.
You want to see that.
You want to see that. It'd be great TV, right?
It would be a GIF for all the ages. I'm sure there's something in soccer or something. Or an owner. I can see Jerry Jones having a meltdown.
Yeah, he's had a couple of meltdowns. Like, not to the point where he's picked something up and, like, thrown it.
Right.
But, yeah, you see him visibly distraught.
I've got one. Seabass in Boston. Cam Neely. He always looks like he's going to choke somebody out.
Yeah, he looks
And he
furious.
Gets animated. He bangs his fist on the table. You can see him swearing. And I guarantee you he's left a hole in the... In
the press box or whatever,
sure.
Wherever he is. That's fine. I mean, it's their team.
I know, and they're passionate about it.
Like, we had Lamoriello on last year, and we asked him, like, how do you constantly look the exact same all the time?
Right.
And he joked that it's kind of like a duck.
Yeah,
like,
the duck.
You know, above the water, you're seeing this stoic, kind of cool, calm, and collected duck.
Right.
And then underneath, the feet are just going crazy. And he said, you know, internally, I'm riding the roller coaster with everyone else. I've learned to not show it, but I guess it's something that you have to learn, you have to develop, because I think human nature, when it's something so important to you,
right,
you're going to react, right, to a big win, to a big loss, you're going to do something.
How are you at home when it gets something?
Like a big sporting event, a big game for one of my teams.
You're laying on the couch. Do you sit up? Do you stand up? Do you pace?
I'm generally a stand-up guy late in a game if it's a tight
really?
Game. I haven't been doing it for the past couple of months because of my knee.
Right.
So I've turned into Lou on the couch. Like, I'm laying down all the time.
Yeah.
For the most part,
yelling
anyway.
And screaming. But, like, does the pizza box get a kick if something goes awry?
I don't think I would kick anything, but, yeah. Like, if the Leafs are in the playoffs, the Raptors in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know.
Those are the two, I guess, Green
Jays,
Bay for a bit.
Jays, Packers in a big game. You know, I was pretty animated with the Argos this past weekend. I got into it.
Well, it was a good game.
It was a very good game. When they took that fumble back to the house,
crazy.
I think I had a fist pump.
Did you?
I might have had a fist pump on the couch. I think I did.
See, we were at your house for Super Bowl.
That was when Russell Wilson threw that pick.
Wasn't it Seattle?
Yeah, it was Seattle threw the pick against New England.
Yeah.
Would have been 3 years ago now, I think.
Because we thought that was wrapped up. And
you jumped off the couch.
I actually jumped off the couch because I was in disbelief.
Right.
That game was over.
It was over. When they were on the 1 yard line, you're thinking, this is done. There's
Seattle's
no chance.
Winning.
And even if they don't punch in a touchdown, I don't remember the exact score. I think it was...
It was close.
New England was up by one or two or something like that. Like, I think they had the potential to kick a field goal and still win the game, or at least tie the game.
Right.
Right? And that was, again, the shock and awe when it came to this game over the weekend, was the Stamps were up 8 in the red zone.
Yes.
They didn't have to score a touchdown.
Yeah.
They didn't have to do anything. You control the ball, don't turn it over, kick a field goal, your money.
Yeah, they were...
The game's over. If you make it an 11-point game with 4 minutes left or whatever, it's over.
I kept thinking to myself, yeah, like, unfortunately, if you're an Argos fan, it's not looking very good.
No. I thought it was done.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of people. Actually, that's what we need to ask Jim Pa, but did he keep the faith, or did he think it was there something in the back of his mind? It's like, man, this is a big hill to climb. Like,
but after the pick, it was over. Like, after...
Yeah,
Bo Levi Mitchell threw that interception. The game was done. They just went out and took a knee. It was over.
But he was still stone-faced.
Maybe, you know, bad snap, botched snap when you're taking a knee. You fumble the snap or something. Ricky Ray's not paying attention. I don't know. Maybe. You know, Pop's been around the game for a long time.
There's been a lot. I guess there's a lot of scenarios that could send your mind to like, hey, I'm not even thinking about this until it's over. Now, I never played in a championship game, but if I was... maybe defending a shutout, for example, like I would be, in my mind, I had an internal clock, so I used to count it down and used to count the seconds. Be 10 seconds left and some fool, the defenseman, would be messing around with it at the blue line, and,
right.
and you'd be like, just play it, let's go, like move it along.
Don't put yourself in a bad spot.
Yeah.
Because anything can happen.
Falls down in a breakaway, now you're in trouble.
Simmons writing in that Ron Caron, do you remember him?
Yes, the professor.
With the Blues and with the Habs. He said best GM tantrums ever were.
Very animated. I actually, at the beginning of my St. Louis tenure, he was still kind of around. Very, very classy gentleman.
I like just looking at his picture. He passed away a few years ago.
Yeah.
But right when I Googled him, I'm like, I know exactly what Steve is talking about. He had some like real, like no jacket on, losing it.
Yeah, he used to get worked up. That's a great one because you're right. He showed that passion, but that's what he was about. He was a passionate man. He would fight with people. Apparently, he would, you know, if there was a bad call, he'd go marching down to the off-ice officials.
I love those guys. I love the fact that that can you have this impression in pro sports. Everything is so on the up and up.
Yeah.
Everyone's so dignified for the most part. I mean, we understand in the moment, coaches can freak out. Players, we hold the different standards. But you assume the executives and the owners, you know, if they're going to freak out, it's behind closed doors. But sometimes guys are like, I'm not going to think about this. I'm just going to act. I'm going to go down. I'm going to cause a scene. I'll apologize for it tomorrow.
Yeah. Get fined. Pay the fine.
Pay the fine. Pay the fine. I have that kind of money. I'm going to pay the fine. Mark Cuban's a good example of a guy like that. Mark Cuban freaks out as an owner right there courtside for the Mavs.
Didn't he take out a billboard when one of his players didn't make the All-Star game or something like that?
He's done a lot of crazy stuff.
And I think he got fined, and he was like, the hell with it.
He doesn't care. You can find the guy's worth billions of dollars. He does not care if you fine. You can't. Like, in owners like that, those guys get fined.
Yeah.
Like $1 million. And these guys just light it
He's
up
like,
in flames.
Yeah, whatever. Doesn't matter. Bring it on.
Like when an owner's getting fined, that dude is getting fined a lot of money.
Yeah,
there's no $5,000 fine.
Like the $2,500 maximum that the PA used to have or whatever. Yeah, it's
like a $500,000 fine.
Legit fine.
And these guys don't even flinch.
But they have that type of money.
They don't learn a lesson. They don't care. Anyway, we're hopeful we can catch up with Jim Pop. Apparently, he may be having phone issues, so we may not catch up with Jim Pop.
Really?
Maybe he heard this conversation and said,
"Yeah, I'm not gonna,
no interest in explaining myself to you two bozos.
I'm not in on this." That's what he probably said. I want nothing to do with it just because he was probably fired up about it.
Well, I want to get his take also on the Eli Manning stuff. I mean, this is a guy who, he was the GM in Montreal when Anthony Calvillo was coming to the end of his run, and you know, towards the end, they kind of had some up and down years. And
well, he may have to go through it at some point if Ricky Ray decides that he's going to still play.
Right. A perfect example. Let's say Ricky Ray comes back next year. Halfway through the year, it's not going so well.
And they want to rebuild.
And they've brought in some kid, or they've got a second stringer who looks like he can play.
Yeah.
May want to rebuild. It happens. I mean, that's the thing about being a GM. You have to be ruthless.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one thing I would say about this Giants situation, if you're not familiar with it. Eli Manning is being benched. Mm-hmm. Geno Smith will start this weekend. First time in 210 games. Eli with 210 straight starts. Ben McAdoo is such a whipping boy right now. We're talking about this in the break. The media is going to absolutely crucify him because he has no resume, and I don't think he'll ever be a head coach again.
So their lack of respect is already in place.
They're not afraid of him. He's like Peter Horacek. You mentioned Ron Rolston in Buffalo. It's the exact same example.
There's people that probably are terrific people and deserve that respect, but will never get it, or will never get a head coaching job again.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't know McAdoo personally. Could be a saint. Could be the greatest guy in the world. This guy has been such a tire fire with the Giants, I don't think he's going to get employed again.
And the media are just lining up to kick him in the junk.
To kick him in the ass. Because they wouldn't do that. If Tom Coughlin made the exact same decision, they might rip into the decision. They wouldn't rip into him personally. It wouldn't get personal. It's going to get personal with McAdoo. But as I've been saying throughout the afternoon, I find it borderline impossible to believe this is solely his decision.
Right,
that's but he is going to step out and take all the heat for it.
That's his job. He's going to take bullets because he's the one who has to execute what's going on, what has been decided, whether that is coach, GM, owner, anybody, everyone involved. If they made a collective decision, he's the one who still has to execute it.
And he has to speak with the media every day.
Exactly, and deal with the media every day.
Yeah, he's going to have to take the bullets. It won't be Jerry Reese, the GM. It won't be the owner.
Nope.
It'll be old Benny McAdoo with the stash and the slick back hair.
They're going to tune him up.
Oh, he's just going to be a whipping boy. And, you know, he's factored into the decision, and I think it's a decision that is an embarrassing one because you're embarrassing your franchise player.
For sure.
You know, you don't mess around with the Mannings. Like, we had Brian Baldinger on in the previous hour, and
his soundbite.
He's been around for a long time. Been with the NFL Network for a while. He played in the NFL for a long time with prestigious teams. His answer, I think it would be this way for a lot of different quarterbacks if they were treated this way, but I do believe the Manning name...
It has clout.
It holds so much clout that when we asked him how he feels about the Giants benching Eli Manning, this is what Brian Baldinger said.
I think it's a disaster. I think it's a disaster and it's an embarrassment.
A disaster and an embarrassment.
He was fired up about it. He was passionate. It was almost like he's very close friends with Eli, and he's doing his bidding for him.
Mm-hmm. No, this is it, though. The Manning name holds so much clout.
Mm-hmm.
It holds so much clout that you don't mess around with it. Like, the guy started 210 games in a row.
That is impressive.
Like, only Brett Favre has started more games consecutively in his career. All right, doesn't sound like we'll catch up with Jim Popp. Leafs Flames tonight. Bobby Mack will be in studio in about 10 minutes. I have a problem on my hands that I'm already anticipating in my household tonight. This is the thing. I like when the Leafs play later games because for the most part, I'm a Nighthawk. Last night, I went to bed at like 9 o'clock.
Yeah, you had an off night.
Yeah, I had the bad melon. I had a headache, and I just said, you know what? That's a Monday night. Leafs aren't playing. Raps aren't playing.
So what could get in your way tonight?
Have you ever heard of a show called This Is Us?
Oh, yes, because Peg Bundy just... mowed through it on, is it on like Netflix or something?
Well, it's on CTV, so but I don't, it's on demand. I don't
season
know.
Season one, I think, was on Netflix or something.
It could be. Yeah, they're into season two.
So I was trying to have a conversation today, and Peg was laying on the couch with the baby, feeding him, and I was shushed because it was like the finale of...
It's big stuff, man. My wife is so obsessed with this show. Obsessed.
She claims that I would be into it, but on principle, I'm not going to watch it because I'm not convinced that I would love it that much.
It's a very dramatic show. They do a very good job of like peak dramatics.
It just seems like it's a bunch of couples that are crybabying. I don't know.
Well, it's a family. I'm not going to break it down.
Okay, yeah.
It's a huge success. Like, it's a massive show.
Okay.
They do massive numbers, and my wife loves it. Your wife loves it.
Yes.
You know, it's... I would think the demographics lean towards women. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
It's a heavily emotional show. It's about a family and the kids and how they grow up. And there's a cliffhanger because the dad's died at some point, but you don't know how he died. I'm subjected to it. I have to watch it every week.
And it's on tonight.
Starts at 9 p.m.
You have multiple TVs.
I have multiple TVs, but I've got the setup. You know how I roll. I've got a routine. And generally speaking... we would tape This Is Us if the Leafs were playing.
Right.
Leaf game at 7 o'clock, third period. We're watching that. We'll check into This Is Us around 10:30. But if the game doesn't start until 9, I'm going to lose that battle. It'll be you can watch the second and third or go somewhere else and watch the first.
How about you push the This Is Us viewing to tomorrow?
Noodles, you know the way this works.
I do know, but there's got to be some form of negotiation here. Your job relies on you watching that game tonight. That's the way I feel.
I need you representing me in the household tonight.
I still lose the argument because... Mm-hmm.
You'll lose.
I'm a big
know this.
Aaron fan.
I watch 82 Leaf games, 82 Raptors games, close to 162 Jays games. There's like three shows that she has to watch, so...
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to throw them a bone, you know, and just be like, all right,
well,
this is us. We're watching.
You may have to, like, change venues.
I might.
You may have to watch it in the bathroom.
My concern is we watch This Is Us, and then I flip to the Leaf game. It's already, like, 4-0 Calgary, and I'm like, forget it.
Or you've missed a big moment for the Leafs early on. You never know.
We'll see. I need some help tonight.
It is a battle.
Maybe a delay. Maybe the Saddle Dome can have another flood or something like that. And game can start around 10 p.m. Eastern time. A rainout for the Leaf game. All right, Bob McKenzie in studio. What's up with this Ian Cole situation down in Pittsburgh? Is he really a fit for the Maple Leafs, for other teams? Get his take on the Michel Therrien, Danny Briere story and Briere's new book. And we'll tee up the Leaf Flames game with Bobby Mack, and the O-Dog will be back in here as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. It's a Maple Leaf game night tonight. They're in Calgary kicking off their Western Canadian swing. You can hear the game right here on TSN 1050 and watch it on TSN 4. And a couple of panel members joining us in studio. How's that for an introduction?
There you go.
The O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, also known as Geoff Ferguson Jr.
And Brian Babcock.
And Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider. What's up, Bob?
Not much, boys. How about you?
Waiting for Ian Cole, the next Chris Pronger, to be a Maple Leaf. I mean, what's up with this story out of Pittsburgh? Everyone loves this guy all of a sudden.
Well, right now, Mike Sullivan doesn't. He's not. Hasn't been in the lineup for three straight games. Healthy scratch. Could he be traded? Absolutely. I think if the Pittsburgh Penguins get the right offer, he's gone. Having said that, the Pittsburgh media reported that the reason he's being held out of the lineup is to protect the asset, that he's effectively played his last game in Pittsburgh. And that may well be the case. If they get the right offer, as I said, I think they'll move him. That they said that they're not playing him because they want to protect him from injury. It's possible. My best information would suggest otherwise, that they're not playing him because they don't like the way that he's playing, and he's kind of on the outs right now with head coach Mike Sullivan. Worth noting, 2 years ago, when Sullivan took over the team in December, in January and February of that season, he was a healthy scratch in 11 straight games. Then got back in the lineup, played really well right through, win the cup, and then played 81 of 82 games last year. And has been a really inspirational guy, taking the puck in the mouth, the whole nine yards, and played some really hard minutes for them. But right now, I think the reason he's not in the lineup is because the coach doesn't want him in the lineup, not because they're protecting the asset. The other point that the Pittsburgh media made that I might disagree with would be that the reason they want to trade him, they don't want to lose him for nothing at the end of the year. He's making $2.1 million in the last of his three-year contract, and they probably can't afford to sign him next year. I don't think that fits the MO of Jim Rutherford or the Penguins at all. Bonino, Cullen, Hainsey, Kunitz. These guys, they got one goal and one goal only in Pittsburgh. We want to win the cup. If they think they can do it with Ian Cole in their lineup and he walks at the end of the year, they're going to do it in a heartbeat. If they think trading him for a center will give them what they need, then they'll do it. And if they think putting him back in the lineup gives them the best chance to do that, I think they'll do that too. So I think that's kind of where it's at.
We always ask you, like, what's the chatter about? But doesn't a team like maybe the Edmonton Oilers, like, don't they have to make a trade to kind of mix things up? Or
Edmonton's got interest in Ian Cole. And, you know, and right away, I mean, the fans in Pittsburgh, they start dreaming of technical. They're, okay, great. You guys get Cole. We get Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. No, that's not happening.
It's not going to happen.
That's not happening. And same thing. I mean, you know, Toronto gets linked a little bit. Might Toronto have interest in Ian Cole for the right price? I think they might. I don't know that. That's just me blue-skying it, speculating. But I would tell you this, that if Toronto wanted Ian Cole, the Pittsburgh Penguins would want Tyler Bozak.
I wouldn't do that deal.
Reunite Bozy and Phil.
I would not make that move.
I wouldn't make that move either. Like, Ian Cole, where's Ian Cole? Let's play hypothetical Tuesday. If the Leafs got Ian Cole, he's a third pairing guy, is he not? Or where would he slide in? Maybe second pairing.
Well, you know, it's weird because
I don't see him as a top four guy.
If he's your third pairing, I'm keeping my third line.
But he was a top four guy and a Stanley Cup winner because of injuries and the way they did things by committee. But you know, he was a really effective guy for them. But
consistently, I don't. On paper,
you like that, don't you?
Oh, it would be awesome.
I kind of want to see that happen.
It would be awesome.
What's your PS4 account, Bozy?
But. You know, now if you're the Leafs, I wouldn't do that unless you felt like there's maybe some depth to push up and Marlow goes now to center ice because
that's not ideal.
You're leaving. I know. I'm just talking.
And I should point out, I wanted to make sure I don't radio myself here because I don't think I did, but people will just say I did. I don't know if the Toronto Maple Leafs how significant their interest in Ian Cole might be. I would suspect they're interested in any defenseman that comes available, see what the price is, what have you. But what I do believe is that if the Pittsburgh Penguins were to try and do a deal with the Toronto Maple Leafs, the guy they would want would be Bozak. They want a quality center coming back for Ian Cole. And if they don't get one, I think they're more inclined to pull their horns back in and say, let's leave him as a healthy scratch until the coach says he's ready to go. We might get an injury, might have to throw him back in there. When he's playing well, we like him plenty. And let's put him back in the lineup because I honestly don't think they're that concerned about UFA status at the end of the year.
No, I'm with you on that. And I think if I'm Jimmy Rutherford, I would want the league to believe the reason he's not playing is because we're protecting the asset. Because if the league believes he's not playing because he's a healthy scratch, why would you give them any value? Yeah, why would you trade anything for him?
I can't even get in the lineup.
Well, he's your seventh defenseman. I'm not giving you anything.
But the sample size, you know, he's won two cups.
I hear you.
And he's played big minutes. Right. And everybody falls on hard times here and there. And he would argue, I'm out of favor with the coach. Doesn't mean I'm not a good player. You know, so I don't know that makes a big, big difference. And as I said, you know, I'm sure Edmonton has interest in Cole. But not at the cost of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. That's way, way too much.
Well, yeah, I would think so.
And I'm not even sure how, well, I guess Pittsburgh could conceivably do it cap-wise and have to work around a few things, but it wouldn't be easy, so.
Edmonton's in a bind, though, because they're so committed starting next year to big money. They're going to need their kids to come up and factor in on entry-level deals, right?
And Puljujarvi's healthy scratch again.
Hasn't been playing well enough. You know, so, like, how much are you really...
You know, to your point, there's no question. I think Peter Chiarelli wants to try to make a move. I'm not sure it's the seismic blockbuster that, you know, people would anticipate or want to see for a team that's struggling as much as the Edmonton Oilers are. I think he wants to try to create a spark, you know, move one piece for another piece and see if that lights a fire under some support players. But I think what they really think in Edmonton, and Chiarelli did a news conference today, and he's obviously under the gun. And what he didn't say, but what I could imagine him wanting to say, and it's just me projecting this for him, would be, hey, listen, if Cam Talbot and Oscar Klefbom and Adam Larson don't play a lot closer to the way they played last year versus how poorly they've played this year,
that Klefbom's been... I had to drop him in my fantasy pool.
He's been terrible.
We could rearrange... We could make 10 trades, and it's not going to make a difference if the guys who we're counting on to be core players arguably are the number one goaltender who had Vezina numbers last year, even though he didn't win the Vezina, and a top-pairing defense that was lights-out good, especially in the playoffs. If those guys don't
play
better...
Ryan says it all the time. You say, like, this league is, you got talent, but
you're at the mercy of
goaltending.
You're at the mercy of your best players, and when they're not going, they're not going.
Yep. Well, we said that yesterday about the Leafs. I mean, internal improvement is what you have to expect, and that's a 15-9-1 team. But Gardner, Zaitsev, Bozak, Marner, and Nylander can contribute more. If those guys start playing up to their capabilities, all of a sudden you're looking at a very different team.
Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing in Edmonton. I mean, how much better would they be instantly if those three guys all played 25% better than they've been playing? Never mind Draisaitl, who's got two or three more gears to see. Even McDavid, he's been fine, but he can be so much better. And then you got to count on some of the guys you bet on. Kajula and Slepyshev and Puljujarvi, and if you got to be patient, I guess you got to be patient. But it's easier to be patient with those guys when you're not. You can't be patient with the big boys because they got to lead the way for you.
Yeah.
We were talking about how it feels like a very unpredictable season has played out through a quarter of the season. You know, you look at it: Stamkos, Kucherov, Goudreau sitting atop the stats leaders, and all three bona fide star players. But Jaden Schwartz, Braden Schenn. Josh Bailey's up there. You got Vegas in first in their division. Pittsburgh taking a step back in the regular season. Washington taking a step back. Chicago's been up and down. Do you expect by the end of the season it becomes more predictable, or does this feel like it's an avalanche that will continue and it's just going to be a random year that no one really expected to happen?
Well, there is a bit of a changing of the guard there. I think the Tampa guys, there's no reason to believe, they may not keep the exact same pace the whole year because they've been so lights out, and they're bound to have some adversity along the way, but they're for real, I think. Although the Lightning have been losing lately.
Mm-hmm. Did you see St. Louis being first in the league?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't see that. I thought they'd be competitive. They always are.
But they were so
especially,
banged up.
And now you got Berglund, who's very close to coming back.
Yeah.
No Fabry for the rest of the year.
But they were so banged up.
I assumed it would be they could dig themselves into an early injury hole that you couldn't get out of. So good on Mike Yeo and his staff for what they've done.
Well,
that's remarkable, and that line has been fantastic. And I would assume that's going to continue because they're all three good players.
I'll give you Tampa. I think a lot of people had them winning the division. The other three division leaders?
Vegas.
New Jersey, St. Louis, and Vegas.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody picked any of those three to be leading the division.
No chance.
I had them all out, all three.
So did I.
By a long
time. Oh, I had Vegas 31st, 31st by a country mile.
Yeah.
And Jersey was
one of my... We were talking about Vancouver
and
Arizona, and you were like, Vegas, I don't care. They will be worse than all of them.
Yeah. But he's been a New Jersey basher for a long time.
What did you call them? The most irrelevant sports franchises in sports.
One of the bottom five irrelevant teams in pro sports.
You called them the most irrelevant. In hockey, you called them the most irrelevant.
Yeah, one of them.
One of them.
Yeah. I'm not backing down because they're off to a good start.
Yeah.
They're the third team in a market. Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm still shocked that they're doing what they're doing.
But the Vegas thing is crazy.
Crazy.
Because it's not only that they're winning, it's that their offense is amongst they're scoring goals at an astonishing clip.
William Karlsson has 13 goals.
Karlsson. Yeah. They have
Bill.
The next highest goal scoring team in that division is Calgary and LA. Tied at 69 goals. Vegas is 81. They have 12 more goals than the next closest team in the division.
It is.
And
crazy.
And the Calgary guys are on fire, the top line anyways.
Yeah. Right.
But, well, I mean, across the board, they, Neil, Perron, Marchessault, Karlsson.
You know what we should have is Gary Lawless call in and have him compare William Karlsson to...
Austin Matthews
or William Nylander or Mitch Marner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe.
Gary would be pumping the tires out there.
Don't talk to me like that, Brian. It was my article.
Yeah, he was not happy with me.
No.
I wasn't happy with the article.
That's fair.
So I let him know it.
That's fair.
We miss Gary up here.
We do.
He left a good team. Winnipeg. Winnipeg's the best team in the country right now.
Yeah, they are good.
Who did they spank last night? Minnesota?
That was a 7-2.
How about Bruce Boudreau after the game? He is carving his team every four or five games.
Yeah. He's like, well, they step it up, and we just don't try. So, with his tie undone, and it's just a mess.
But Chris Stewart was a healthy scratch there. Was it 2 games ago?
He was playing last night. I saw him leaning up against the boards when Boudreau
And the thing of it is, if you're the general manager of that team, you're like right up against the cap. Every day is a struggle. And so you look at your roster, and on paper... I thought I thought people missed on that one because I don't do the yeah. voting at the beginning of the year, but I look at it and I think they had Minnesota out and I'm like, nah, Minnesota, they're in. Oh, yeah. They're yeah. missing the boat on Minnesota. That's a really good team. They're going to be really good. And I can't explain it.
No.
And as I say, if you're Chuck Fletcher, you're looking at your lineup and you're going, looks to me like a good team, should be a good team. No,
you can probably go back to, like you said, about Talbot. Isn't Dubnyk's numbers way down?
They are. But, I mean, we were talking about it in the 5 o'clock hour of how most goaltenders, period, their numbers are down because scoring chances are up. Maybe a little bit cleaner look because of looks that they're facing because of the rules being yes. enforced, slashing on the hand. So forwards are actually getting clean yeah. looks, and they're not being slashed on the hand so they can use that skill.
I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but in The Athletic today, I believe my pal Eric Duhacek wrote a story about the slashing crackdown and what a huge impact it's had. Just anecdotally speaking, to coaches and managers for more than the last month now, they say it's amazing, the difference, that they didn't realize. It's something that seemed like it was just to protect somebody's hands has changed the way the game is played and how much harder it is to defend and how much more flow there is and how many more scoring chances and the goals.
Yeah.
And that's even quite aside from the power plays, just the conditioning of a player's mind as a guy's going by him to not be able to chop, chop, chop and slow him down is oftentimes giving him a free pass to the offensive end or towards the net.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what that also can elevate is the importance of having great teammates because, I mean, if you're holding onto the puck longer, guys get open more, guys have opportunities in their offensive zone. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Stamkos, Kucherov, Namestnikov, that line is killing it. You know, Shen and Schwartz and Tarasenko, I mean, Goudreau, Monahan's having a great year. It seems like...
Seems like it's the year of the big line.
Right, the big yeah. line is really just taking advantage. And maybe that's a coincidence with the new rule, I don't know, but it appears to be the case. And then you look at Toronto, where whoever Matthews plays with, that's technically the big line, and there's been... Nylander's been through there, Marner's been through there.
Well, now we just talked about that on SportsCenter, and it's like playing with a superstar centerman. The coach's priority is to get the star player going, like the superstar. And I had great relationships with Sundin and Francis in Carolina and Toronto. And if you play on their line, you can be buddies and everything. But if you don't perform, you're gone. Just get another guy in there. Because that's... Coach will just put somebody else there.
Mm-hmm. Except for on the left side, where Hyman plays every single game.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he gets the hall pass.
Hyman's not moving, but...
And the only reason we're going through this revolving door of right wingers is because William Nylander has one goal in 17 games. Mm-hmm. That's it. Because we know... What Mike Babcock's default mechanism is to play Hyman, Matthews, and Nylander together. But he can't do it if Nylander's not producing at all. And that's what's happened. Mm. And so, as a result, Nylander finds himself skating with Matt Martin and Dom Moore.
Good luck getting out of the hole with those two.
Well, and you know, in the hockey world, in coach speak would be, that's your penance. Now you've got to show... You can do it there, and the minute you show you can do it there, then we'll move you up.
He's got to have his first two shifts of the game. He's just got to be moving. Because if the coach gets any sense that you're dragging your lip, he's going to be like...
But Mike can help him, too, in a sense that if you start him there, but then all of a sudden, second-line power play. Like, you know, get
No, keep him on the same power, because that power play unit's good.
Usually don't
but, Jamie, you got to rip one home. You got to get one.
But I'm
so
saying
the coach is going to be like, okay,
you're going to put him there... And let them know that's where you're going to start. But and you have to place him in a situation to at least get a good look.
And you get the feeling that if the coach sees any inkling that he's on,
yeah,
then
right
away it's
exactly.
right up.
Like,
and,
to me, that's a in-game adjustments. The best coaches always do it.
But the flip side is, you know, maybe Connor Brown goes up there and looks really good.
And why wouldn't he? He's been very good all season long, Connor Brown.
Huh? Big opportunity for him.
It is.
Because it can go both ways. If Nylander, let's say he goes out and rips one home. Guess who he's playing with on Thursday night?
Mm-hmm.
Probably Matthews.
But
again.
Matthews is the kind of player, too, where I look at it. If he's on his game, it almost doesn't matter who's on his line.
Right. There's a Sid element to it, McDavid element.
Yeah. Right. He just goes, and he's going to get chances, and he'll get his looks, and if he puts a couple in, then he's off and running.
That wouldn't shock me one bit if Connor Brown. Connor Brown scored a lot of points in junior, man. He knows how to play.
Yeah.
Wouldn't shock me if that works.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. Leafs in Calgary tonight. You can watch it on TSN 4. Hear it right here on TSN 1050. Enjoy it tonight, Bob.
Thanks, boys.
Here's Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider. Get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine and recap a busy afternoon next. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the NHL board tonight, I will fade the Sabres. I'll take Tampa tonight. On the Islanders at home against Vancouver, and Philly has lost 8 in a row. They're paying $2 at home against San Jose. They're going to win at some point. It's not like the Sharks have been playing that great this season. They're going cross-country. I'll take Philly. Throw down 20, you can score 84. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game.
What are you thinking out in Calgary?
I don't know. Calgary's a pretty sneaky good team. I mean, they've had a good start, right?
Come on. They've really come on. I think it took a little bit for Mike Smith. Mike Smith has actually been very good since the drop of the puck, but to settle in with that decor, Hamonic, same thing, settling in, but they've got a pretty talented team. It's just they've kind of quietly kind of all of a sudden, hey, we've got a bunch of points.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I think the league, with exception of a couple teams, are pretty top-heavy. Like, you got one line. Like, it's... I think you were saying this earlier, Brian, like it's almost become like a one-line league. Like every team, the good teams have one big line that you got to find a way to shut down.
Jerry Jagr's starting to look like an old man out there.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
He is an old man, dude. He's 46 years old.
Somebody the other day said he lost a step. Really?
Yeah.
He's 45 years old.
Yeah, he lost that step 46. In the 90s. He lost his step.
He's so strong on the puck still.
I know, but he's...
It's funny to watch him haul ass up ice, though. Like, if there's a quick turnover at the blue line and he's got a...
It's a crop duster.
Oh, dude. It's tough to watch. Like, he's not picking up that high man. He's swinging his stick at some other guy behind him to get his man.
But that's why, when you look at it, I think it's... Florida wanted to move past that because his line mates... Huberto and Barkov were starting to rely on him, or he was relying on them too much to get him the puck. That's what worries me in Calgary is you play with a legend, you're always deferring to him, regardless of how old he is or where he's at in his career. And I was worried that they were going to try and force feed him the puck all the time, where these younger players who are playing better than him and faster than him right now should be taking care of it themselves.
Right.
Well, he was going to be a role player going there, but unfortunately for him, I think he's a fourth line guy right now, and maybe some secondary power play unit.
Well, he has been. Yeah, they have been. Early on, they wanted to get him in there and get him playing.
You
could
just
see
it on his face
when
he comes back to the bench. He's just like,
they push him down on the lineup though. Like, he's not. It's not like he's playing 24 minutes a night. Like, he's. I think they've started to realize they can slot him a lot better. So it was Ferland who was playing up on that top line. And it's Goudreau, Monahan, Ferland, Tkachuk, Backlund, Frolik, which is actually a very good line. That Tkachuk is a pain in the ass to play against.
I love him. I like what he said, too, about Landeskog. He's like, nah, I don't have anything against him. You can't have anything against him if you're Tkachuk.
Yeah, you play like that.
He's cross-checked guys in the head, too.
Well, he got suspended the other day in Detroit for...
Yeah, although that was nothing. That was a joke of a suspension.
I thought it was a bad...
I would have protested or I don't know.
Last year, though, who did he get? He got someone with a similar. He got two games, I think, for cross-checking someone in the head.
Last
it
year,
Doughty. It was against L.A. I think.
Well, yeah, him and Doughty had that incident, which, you know, Doughty is. I think Doughty may have the Pat Quinn, like he may wait on Tkachuk and get him.
Oh, he'll catch him. Yeah. He'll catch him. It may be 5 years down the road, but he'll catch him.
Those guys don't have short memories. No, but they create a target for themselves. If you play in that gray area, and Tkachuk is a gray area player.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if he came out and he's like, "Oh, that's you can't have that in the game. That's a joke. It should have been more." It's like, dude, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to cross check some guy in the next 25 games.
And he gets it. Like, I think Tkachuk is one of the. He's a throwback because of his old man.
Right.
I think his old man brought him up that way.
I love him as a player. Remember, we were at the draft. How happy Burke was.
Yeah.
Like, Burke came by and spoke with us beforehand, and he even said, he's like, the guy we like, we don't think he'll be there.
They didn't think they were going to get him.
And that was the guy they liked.
Yes.
And that was the guy they wanted, and he was there at 6.
Yeah.
I don't remember who jumped the gun. They, I don't remember who it was.
Propped up.
I think it was Vancouver who took Ole Ulevi, maybe.
Wasn't Philly at six? Didn't Calgary get him at seven? Wasn't Provorov six?
I think, no. Calgary had six.
Okay.
Philly had seven. Provorov went seventh to Philly.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that was...
Yeah.
Maybe it was, I don't know. What do I know? I can't remember.
No, but you're right. It's I remember Berkey saying, like, we didn't think he was going to be there. Mm-hmm. When he was talking afterwards with us, he said, like, that was an adjustment because I think the pick right in front of them, they anticipated he was going to be gone.
Right.
And the team chose. Well,
he made the team as an 18-year-old and hasn't looked back.
You're right.
You know?
Well, either way. But he's tough to play against. That team has some skill, and they've got a little bit. But even our boy Mark Giordano had a good season.
Oh, yeah. He's a really good player. Stage, yep. He's in the lineup tonight, I think, last time I checked.
Yep.
See this Josh Gordon story? He's going to be reinstated. He's been reinstated to play for the Browns. I believe he'll be active as of this weekend, so he's going to play the remainder of the year. He's been suspended for the past, like, 3 years. Hasn't played since 2014.
Quite a story.
So he was at Baylor, and he came out and he did an interview today, and he said he was making upwards of $10,000 a month as a student at Baylor selling weed.
Really?
Which, that doesn't surprise me at all.
What kind of pressure does that put on the school? I mean, does that put them under the gun?
This guy's been so outspoken since he returned to the limelight.
He used to drink on game days.
Yeah. He said he's been drinking since high school, drinking
like
on game days,
like he said he loved the feel of whiskey in his belly before he went to the football field.
Like, I appreciate the candor, but I am shocked that he's immediately put a target back on his back, like, look at what this guy's been up to.
Come and check me out.
And I guess he's clean now, and he's trying to get on with his life. He's still a young guy. He's only 26 or 27.
Yeah.
Great talent.
Yeah.
But why come out and be like, yeah, I was selling weed, 10 grand a month at Baylor, like massive school.
I know.
Yeah, like, I agree. I appreciate the honesty, but you're just making everybody think, okay.
Let's dig back into it.
Let's dig it all up,
and let's just wait for this guy to go crazy again. And
yeah. Well,
I'm not surprised, though, man. As a guy who went to school, there are two things that are guaranteed moneymakers in college.
Weed and pizza?
Three. Booze was going to be the other one.
Okay.
Selling booze?
No, just if you own a bar or whatever, you are making money from college students.
For sure.
With booze and weed. So 10 grand a month.
I don't understand how you guys, like, you probably are not the right guy to ask, but how you got anything done.
Well, yeah, I am the right guy to ask.
I didn't get anything done.
Yeah, I'm actually the perfect guy to ask.
Kachuk was
like, if you're high and drunk all the time, how do you
get
work?
Nothing
you
done.
You don't do anything.
You get to 260 pounds. That's
right.
What you get.
That's where the pizza money comes back into play.
You were right. Kachuk was six. Ulevi was five in Vancouver.
Nice pick by Jimmy Benning.
Actually, I think this Ulevi can play. We'll see.
Over in Finland, he's having a great year. All right, boys, we're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.